Welcome to another episode of the EV Leaders, the podcast where we explore the latest trends, innovations, and insights in the electric vehicle and automotive industry. I'm your host, Ryan, and today we have a special guest with us. We are excited to welcome Rory Brogan, the founder and CEO of TowRev Motors, a company dedicated to pushing the boundaries of electric vehicle motor technology and design. Rory is going to bring a wealth of knowledge and experience in the EV space. So I want to welcome to the show. Rory, thank you so much for being here. Super excited to have you on.
Oh, absolutely. Ryan, thank you so much for having me.
It's going to be a great episode, and I want to lay the foundation for our listeners a little bit more about who Rory is and who is TowRev Motors. So can you kind of give a little bit of background of what you guys are doing over there at TowRev?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are, maybe the easiest way to put it is just pioneers of a next generation type of electric motor. And we refer to it as the double axial flux motor. It's a lot of engineering jargon. It can sound very scary to some folks hearing all that, but it's really just a motor that looks more like a pancake as opposed to a Coke can. And with the way we've laid our motor out, what it allows us to do is to create a very high efficiency motor that allows you to also get a lot more torque than you traditionally would in the process, and doing so in a more sustainable manner. We have this very exciting proprietary structure within our motor that allows us to essentially maximize the conductor volume and minimize your reliance on things like passive elements, specifically rare earth metals and magnets in this case.
Yep. I absolutely love that. So let's talk about that design a little bit more. So you said it's more like a pancake instead of the Coca-Cola design. Can you kind of explain that a little bit more?
Yeah. If you look at any electric motor on the planet, they really break down into two basic subcategories. You have what are most commonly found. I mean, these are, by most common, I mean, you pull open any Tesla on the road, almost any other vehicle on the road or an electric vehicle on the road. I mean, and everything from like dental motors to fans, they're all pretty much the same thing, which is what's referred to as a radial flux motor. Just means that the motor looks like a Coke can. It's just a cylinder. And these are very, very high performance devices, right? If you look at how Tesla performs or any of these electric vehicles on the market, they can be made to be these very, very high performance items. But the key drawback that has become very important when you're looking at radial flux versus axial flux, and the reason that axial flux is getting so much more or such accelerated traction right now, is that the magnetic field shape of the motor itself within a pancake motor relative to a radial flux motor is more efficient. I can get into the technicalities behind it is, but suffice at high level to say that you can really shorten the magnetic field path. You can make it a much straighter, nice 90 degree interaction, which is where these magnetic fields like to be. And overall, and this is true for every type of pancake motor, not just ours, it allows you to get a more efficient magnetic interaction and allows you to actually decrease the size of the motor while still putting out the same amount of power as a traditional motor. And so the metric that is often used is you can save up to 2/3 of the space by switching to a pancake motor relative to a traditional radial flux motor. Of course, and you're looking at something like automotive, where space is really such a premium, especially in electric vehicles, where you need all the space you can get to get the battery to the point you need it to be able to increase range. Our ability to shrink the footprint of that motor and do so in a way where you're able to cut a lot of the rare earth content that you originally had associated with it has become a really remarkable value proposition across the electric vehicle world right now.
Interesting. So you guys are selling, so who you guys, I don't want to take it, I'll ask the question. Like, so you guys, you're primarily selling to like the Teslas of the world and like these automotive, that's who you guys are typically going after? Or like, please correct me if I'm wrong there. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a combination. The automotive world is very case by case. Like Tesla, for example, has insourced everything from, I mean, up to and potentially soon, including the sourcing of like extraction of materials from the ground itself.
Yeah.
And so certainly there's a compliment that we could have to them, though they're not necessarily our customers just because they have everything in source. What we're really focused on and seeing the most excitement from are these tier one suppliers and automotive customers that are looking to new technologies as a way to cut through the noise and as a way to say, hey, look, you can get cool technology in a Tesla, no doubt. But you can't get in a Tesla is this. And this specific thing allows you to go further or to be able to get better performance or have a more fun drive or any number of things while getting to keep it all within your own internal brand. One of the real risks that we're kind of on the forefront of preaching here is as electric vehicles evolve, as standardization inevitably starts to take hold, if as a traditional automaker, you're going against something like Tesla and you're still using something that's basically the Tesla motor and a Tesla battery and a Tesla software architecture standard eventually, what really differentiates you from Tesla? Why wouldn't I just buy a Tesla? And so this is where we're really trying to give people the opportunity to differentiate, is get back to that core competency, get back to where it was motors originally. Look, way back when with the dawn of automotive in the first place, it was motors. It really cut a lot of these companies apart from all the rest of the noise and made them successful in the first place. And we're just trying to offer a way to kind of get back to that route, get back to a point of technological differentiation that creates a barrier that isn't just a brand on the front of your car. Really speaks to the core of what the customer is buying.
Absolutely. And speaking of like technological advances, can you share like how the approach to like maybe you guys have changed since you guys have gotten started, or just how the general change of EV design and technology has evolved since you founded?
Well, there's been a lot of changes since we got started and in general, just across the spectrum. Maybe easier to start with just the changes that we've seen. There's this big show that goes on every year. It's called the Battery Show. There's a subset of that, which is the Electric and Hybrid Vehicle Technology Expo. I believe I got the exact name right. It goes on every October. It's actually coming up again this year. We'll once again be in attendance. But when we very first went to this show, this was 2 years ago now, I didn't even have like a Torv badge on. I had a badge, but I didn't say. I was like, oh, you know, I'm working for a motor company. I posed as like, okay, I'm a reporter. Just trying to get information. And I was talking to all these folks at the show, and it kind of split into two camps. You had the people who were like, yep, axial flux motors, these pancake motors, these are it. These are the thing. These are all, of course, startups like ourselves.
Interesting.
Giving this message. But then you talk to the really big companies, BorgWarner, Nidec, others in attendance. And what they were saying was, oh, you know, yeah, axial flux, yeah, it's there. And there's some niche somewhere that's going to be filled fine. But realistically, the world's not going to these things. Fast forward a year. This was last year's show. We go, and a couple of those big organizations had axial flux motors on display on the floor. Again, just this continuing acceleration. In fact, it was probably, again, biased because this is the world that we live in, probably one of the most commonly talked about and certainly most interest expressed in us as a organization was, okay, axial flux looks like it's picking up. What makes you guys different? What does the landscape look like? And that is just, I mean, accelerated, especially so this year. We're having conversations with some of the largest brands on the planet about how can we augment the capabilities that they already have just by switching in a motor. How can we give you, in some cases, 5 to 10% boost in range just by switching a motor out? How can we safeguard supply chains, cut rare earth metals? How can we free up space, allow either for cost savings, bill of material reductions, or open up space for more batteries, depending on what the architecture is? It's been this really remarkable acceleration from a space that initially no one quite seemed to know what to make of it. And of course, we get to play a very, very exciting role. Overall, in terms of electric vehicle technology, I think overwhelmingly right now, you're seeing a real race toward how can we protect our supply chains. I think the volatility of an upcoming U.S. election certainly adds to that thought process of, okay, well, we don't really know what the next 2, 4, 5, however many years in the future, we don't really know what's going to look like
yet. Yeah, yeah.
So what can we do to work more with domestic suppliers? How can we work to reduce reliance on things like rare earth metals? How can we look for ways to find new technologies that still have that cost component embedded in them? And this, it kind of becomes this three real questions you have to answer if you're us, right?
You have to have new technology. You have to be able to offer them some performance benefit they can't get elsewhere, and you have to do it at a cost that is reasonable. And our real effort is finding a way to balance this. And we're certainly in the design stage, certainly still in the early stages as a startup and getting there right now. But we've made some pretty remarkable progress on that front.
Interesting. Yeah, I want to talk about like the progress that you guys like has made, especially like how economic or like trends in the marketplace have swayed and the variability is there. But like, yeah, what role has those economic conditions and the needs of the marketplace, how has that shaped what you guys are doing with vehicles?
Well, price has become a big name of the game. And if you look at how just the electric vehicle market has evolved, really probably since, I'd say 2020, 2021, kind of that pandemic craziness when it was like Lucid and Rivian and their price was through the roof and there was all these conversations of well, it's everyone going electric, right? And a regulation supporting that and conversations potentially that under a decade, we're going to all be driving electric vehicles. I don't think that it's not the case that electrification is accelerating. I think it is certainly accelerating.
Yeah.
I think that we have started to hit kind of this natural tapering off as any startup, or not startup, but any market eventually hits, right? Any new market's going to approach this kind of initial saturation point. You get the people who are really, really, really excited early on.
Yeah,
who adopt these vehicles, and you're going to have another portion of the population that says, okay, yeah, I'll adopt, but only when range or price get to some point that's more manageable, and other groups can take a lot longer to convince. But I think that kind of what we're seeing in the market right now is just a natural reflection of that overexcitement, right? I don't think that electrification is going away. I don't think it's going to stop growing. I think it's certainly going to continue to. But is it going to grow at the pace where every single one of us is driving an all electric vehicle by 2030, by 2035 in some places? Maybe, maybe not. I think that hybrid vehicles you're going to see a lot of, but at least as the overall market has evolved here, that's where we sit and have kind of seen the correction of the market back to, okay, now here's kind of the same point. Of course, still opens up a lot of opportunities for us, allows us to build relationships with some of these large organizations that are going to allow us to be successful, especially as again, technology becomes this key way of differentiating within the market.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's like a ton of opportunity, especially with stuff like this. It's just like the EV market is just, it's growing so fast, and like every day, every week, like there's something that is just like changing with it and new opportunities are coming up. And it's just like, if you're able to capitalize actually on those opportunities.
Yeah. And it's, the way that we see the market is, especially in a slowdown, in something as highly competitive as the EV market is. One of the, what would allow Tesla, right, when they first started out, was the ability to say, these vehicles are fun, you can drive them around, and hey, by the way, you get to feel good about yourself while you're doing it, it's a green vehicle. And of course, the tech was very, very highly differentiated. It gave them, to this day, a massive lead on all of these very, very large companies. And now what we're trying to offer to a lot of these other organizations, or to Tesla, if they have any interest in reaching out, I'm always happy to have a conversation. But we're trying to offer this ability to catch back up and to say, okay, we have these new technologies. Now we can level the playing field and it can really become this more diversified product offering. Tesla has its niche. Maybe another manufacturer has another niche. And for each of those, we might be able to play in and make an opportunity that didn't exist beforehand.
Absolutely. Let's talk a little bit more about emerging trends that you're also like seeing and like how you guys are going to capitalize on those. So, yeah, what emerging trends do you see having like a significant impact on the electric vehicle industry in the upcoming years?
In the upcoming years, I think this has been a continuing trend. Rare earth metals continues to be a very, very big point of conversation. Finding ways to move toward domestic manufacturing. We've had a lot of conversations within the last year or so with large organizations that are looking to move their manufacturing and their supply lines if not specifically to the United States, then to Central America, to North America. We work with a couple of large organizations that do a lot of work in Mexico and Canada. I think you're starting to see a lot of push toward, within the EV world, opportunities outside of China. I think there's a lot of excitement in seeing kind of opportunities sprouting up in the backyard in a lot of ways for these big organizations. It allows them to get more immediate access to new technology, allows for the supply chains to become a lot shorter, allows you to take advantage of a bunch of different government incentives that are out there to work with American-made manufacturers, especially within the world of electric vehicles. So I think that those are probably the two biggest trends that I've seen, is this continued push away from rare earth metals and then this quite rapid adoption of domestic supply chains, or at least near-shore supply chains.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like a lot of like political things will happen too within like the next few months, determining where we're getting our products from as well.
I think so. One of the exciting things about being a motor company is that wherever the government stands come November, we get to offer the ability to work with, right?
If it's
a more progressive White House, we get to work with electric vehicles and electrification and emissions reductions and all that good stuff, and vice versa. If it's a conservative White House, it gets back to this domestic manufacturing and, we know that we want to be more competitive at home. And so for us, and we'll knock on wood, this all works out the way I say it's going to. For us, it looks like there's the opportunity to be able to play equally well with whichever administration happens to be
there,
and still be able to get support and still be able to see the acceleration of electrification. Now, whether the same level of government subsidies exist to electrify, who knows? But again, I think that overall, as a society, I think there's a large push toward more environmental consciousness. It doesn't necessarily mean moving toward an all-electric vehicle, but something like a hybrid vehicle. But in any case, it allows us to have an opportunity to continue working and growing and bringing a lot of that domestic manufacturing, that supply chain protection back to our customers.
Is there an opportunity for you, as we're talking about like government relations and whatnot, like to win government contracts actually? Mm-hmm. How does that play out then?
Yeah. So we're exploring actually actively right now. There's a couple of different Department of Defense opportunities that are out there that we're keeping our eyes on. We actually partnered with the National Renewable Energy Lab and Oak Ridge National Laboratory, both got them to come together. And we're still waiting to hear back on this grant opportunity through the U.S. Department of Energy. But we got both of them to come together and say, hey, this is a technology that has a lot of promise. We really want to see this succeed. We actually won recently. This is a very, very small pitch competition. When you think about government funding, it's not a lot of money in the scheme of things. We won this U.S. Department of Energy, or came in third of this U.S. Department of Energy pitch competition not long ago. They gave us some additional, just non-dilutive funding, some additional opportunities
to
be flexible and accelerate product development. We're certainly looking at it. A lot of the, at least motor procurement, has seemed to have gone toward the large defense style contractors, at least when you're looking at doing work with the Navy or the Air Force or the Department of the Army. There are certainly opportunities out there, but I will say we've seen a lot more opportunities for batteries than there have been for motors or propulsion systems, as they're often referred to in government contracts. So long story short, we have certainly won them. We're certainly on the radar. We always continue to monitor it. We would love to see some additional stuff come out. There are opportunities out there that we're working on.
I love it. So you obviously are in the space. You're an entrepreneur in the space. And I want to talk to other entrepreneurs or professionals in the EV industry. What advice would you give to them to stay ahead of like future changes and capitalize on new opportunities?
Yeah. I think the more conversations you can have with people, the better. I find that certainly, like, you can look up
any market research analytics report that might be out there online. And I've relied on a lot of these things to build in like pitch decks and stuff like that to say, hey, look, here's a big macro problem. There is no substitute. And this is true for entrepreneurs or leaders within the EV space as much as it is anywhere else. There's no substitute for a conversation with someone, being able to sit down and have even 15 to 20 minutes, being able to just explain what you're building, being able to hear what are the challenges that they're facing. Even if it's stuff that you already had a feeling on, getting the real confirmation from someone saying, yes, we have this problem. Yeah, we're looking for a solution. It's an urgent problem. We're really kind of struggling to find a way to overcome it. Anything like that is really, really of value. And so I would say just my advice, especially so for entrepreneurs in the space, is do your best to get in touch with folks. Show up to conferences. A lot of these things are free. You have to fly to them, but a lot of them are free to just show up to and then walk the floor and shake hands and talk. And you can accomplish a lot of research within a day or two. But yeah, there's no substitute for sitting down and talking to someone, really getting to understand what their business is like, where the challenges they see are, and what opportunities there are to work with folks in the future.
Yeah. I want to add on to that as well. A lot of times people will ask me for I have a business, how do I get business ideas? It's a lot of times well, what's the challenge that you have right now? Like, what are challenges you have in your day-to-day life? Just kind of identify the small ones, and those small ones might be problem that thousands or millions of other people also have. And so that's a great opportunity. But I also echo going to these events and actually talking to people. There's no substitute for real customer feedback like that.
Oh, it's Y Combinator that does a, they say this, that it's kind of cliche, but it's build what people want. And the only way to figure out what people want is to talk to them and to get them to say, yeah, we want this. And as an entrepreneur, you wear a lot of hats, but you've really got two jobs at the end of the day. The first one is make sure that whatever product you're building, whatever idea is, make sure that people actually want it and have as much research done to show people want it, they're willing to pay this. As much information you can have on that, great. And again, the second job is just to keep it financed. If you have the first problem solved, your job of keeping the company financed has become a lot easier.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to ask as well, you talked a little bit about events. What are two or three events people that are newer to the space should consider going to?
I would say the Battery Show is the top one. That's where we really got our feet wet initially, was showing up there, just walking the floor, talking to people, shaking hands.
Yep.
There's a couple of other ones that go on. I think something like CES can be good, because you usually get a lot of big people on the floor and just be able to talk to them. You got to be careful that it's not just their sales guys that are out there. You have to kind of really focus on what specifically are the engineering conferences, where are these people going to go. There's a couple of different trade show conferences. I'm blanking out what the exact acronyms are they stand for. But yeah, the Battery Show is where I would start, honestly, if I were looking at the space. SAE, another good place. There's an organization for anyone that's looking at starting up a company, especially in the EV space. I'd highly recommend looking into the GAMIC program. It's GAMIC, Global Automotive and Mobility Innovation Competition. Even if you're not a entrepreneur actively right now in the space, it's an organization that is really working hard to provide resources to aspiring entrepreneurs. It's folks who act as mentors anyway to a lot of the startup community, who are, at least in my opinion, usually willing to sit down and listen and say, hey, I hear what you're trying to build. I think it could be great. You need to talk to, I don't know, Joe at XYZ company.
Yeah.
He'll be able to direct you on where to go to. This is a special case for anyone that's a student. Use that student ID to reach out to anyone and just say, hey, I'm doing research on this. I promise you, you will get a response. That's something I wish I had done more often. But it's a great way just to start building early on, is just reaching out and saying, hey.
Honestly, I love that advice so much. When I started podcasting, just a little side note here, to add on to that, I was a senior in college. And when I was reaching out to people that probably should have been talking to me, I was like, hey, I'm a senior at the University of Iowa. I always played the college card. It's such a great card to play.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter which college you go to, by the way.
It does not.
It's interested in that. I'll get folks. I was SMU for my undergraduate, and I did Georgetown for my postgraduate. But I'll get folks that reach out to me from all over the U.S. who just say, hey, I'm a student. I'm looking to learn more about this. And I am always happy to have a conversation with someone who's still in school, just getting familiar with the space. So please do use that to your advantage.
Use that card and hammer that card home here. But let's talk a little bit more about listeners who are interested in electric vehicles and they want to actually make an EV purchase. What are some of the things that they should look for when making their EV purchases?
Comes down to a lot of the customer themselves. I think if you're really looking at purchasing an EV, understanding what your specific needs are, what you're really specifically looking to get out of that EV are, right? If you're looking for a vehicle just to be your daily driver, right? I'm in Arlington, Virginia. If you're just looking for something to get around Arlington, Virginia, something to get around like the DC area, you don't need something that's got 500 miles of range on it. Realistically, you're going to be parking it at a charging station somewhere in town. There's plenty of them, or back at home and letting it charge. You can find cost-effective small EVs. If you're really looking for something that's like, I'm going to be using this to go longer distances, right? Maybe Austin might be a great example, right? You got to go into Dallas. You got to go from, I grew up in Colorado. So going from like, yeah, even Denver to Dallas, it would be something where you really need to have that real long range. And at that point, you really have to look into, okay, how much time is it going to take to charge? And it's all information that's very relevant, very readily available out there. I don't think there's right now any one specific vehicle that I'd say like, this is it. This is the one you have to have.
You have to do.
I think it's very personable, but I would really suggest looking at what your specific lifestyle requires. And if you don't need to buy something that has 500 miles worth of battery range between charges, and maybe you don't have to, you can save a lot of money doing that. The biggest cost driver of a lot of these vehicles is the battery. And if you don't need to have that much battery, great. You can buy a much cheaper vehicle and still get wonderful performance out of any of these.
I love it. That's really good advice. Can you also share, so for people that are listening, like, okay, like I'm going to, you know, look into buying this a little bit more. What are some of those companies that are like really exciting you right now within the EV space that people should look to buy? Of course, Tesla's out there, but are there any others that come to mind?
This is my engineering geek out here. If you are really looking from a motor and just tech science perspective, I think there'll be some really cool stuff. I'm very fortunate to know a couple of their engineers and to every now and then get to talk even a high level about just the technology that they've been able to put in their motor. It's a remarkable, remarkable device they've been able to make. So they certainly, whenever I think of like an EV that I like to follow just from a, hey, this is cool, Lucid is always on the top of that list. Right now, Tesla certainly continues to be the big one. Rivian seeing a little bit more uptick. Just from my own personal, seeing a bunch around town, Polestar seems to be something that has picked up quite a bit, at least in the DMV area. I haven't driven one, so I can't personally attest to whether I like it or not. But from an engineering perspective, Lucid continues to be a very, very high standard, at least in the motor side of what they're creating.
Yeah, Lucid, it's a good-looking car as well. I really like the design of the Lucid car. It has like that luxury feel to it that I really like about it.
Yeah. I've gotten to know a couple of their engineers, and just talking to them, seeing how excited they get about like the new stuff they're putting in is always just really, really cool.
I love that. Last question for you here. What tips would you have to current and future EV owners to maximize the performance, efficiency, and lifespan of their electric vehicles? Let's geek out a little bit more on what advice you would have.
Yeah, in terms of maximizing range and lifespan, I mean, these things are pretty long lifespan vehicles in the first place. The motors and the batteries that go into them, I know that you see news articles every now and then of safety hazards. I'm a pretty strong believer those are very actually isolated cases. I think that it is a very high performance type of vehicle. I think that if you're really looking at the range of your vehicle, I'm trying to remember my train of thought was going with this. It's having one of those brain farts here for a second. If you're really looking at the range of your vehicle and kind of what you want to get out of it, I'm totally blanking. My apologies on this.
You're good. Hey, like I said, we'll be able to edit all this out.
Cool. Awesome.
Yeah. Anything that you want to add there, or just we can cancel it there as well.
I would just cancel it there. Yeah.
Right, perfect.
My apologies. I don't know where my train of thought was going.
You're good. That's why we can edit all this out. So no worries. I'll close this out here with our last official question, and then we'll do the outro here. So awesome. So if someone was listening to this, Rory, and they're like, oh my gosh, Rory is awesome, and I need to learn a little bit more about Tow Rev Motors, where can they connect with you and check you out a little bit more?
Yeah, so we've certainly got our website. Super easy. It's just a contact form on our website. You can fill in and then send it off to us. Takes something like 5 seconds to fill out. Otherwise, please feel free to reach out to me. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. Feel free to shoot me a DM. I do ask that there's some level of personalization in there, just because I get a lot of these and it makes my life a lot easier to weed through. If there's something that says, hey, I hear you on the EV Leaders podcast, I want to reach out. Awesome. Much easier for me to figure out, hey, this is someone that we need to be in touch with.
I absolutely love that. And for those that want to learn more about Rory and Tow Rev, be sure to visit their website at towrevmotors.com. That link will be below. And don't forget to subscribe to the EV Leaders for more episodes featuring experts in the EV and automotive industry. Until next time, drive safe and stay charged.